Chapter 6. Blood, Toil, Tears and Sweat. Winston had his own ways of doing things. Although he worked late at night, he usually woke up quite early. However, he would often work while he was still in bed. He was not a formal kind of person and liked to lie in bed smoking while he discussed what was happening in the war with his colleagues. He always had a short sleep of 2 hours in the afternoons because he knew he was going to stay up late. After sleeping, he had a hot bath, his second bath of the day, at 7 p.m. Winston loved baths and enjoyed turning over in his bath like a huge fish. Sometimes this caused a lot of water to come out of the bath and pass through the floor onto visitors' coats hanging in a small room below. While Winston was in his bath, his secretary had to wait outside the bathroom door, listening to what he said and writing it down. Chip Skemmel, one of his secretaries, remembered that Winston used to shout, "Don't come in!" As she stood outside the bathroom door, she heard wonderful bathroom noises and the sound of Winston washing himself. Sometimes, she said, he'd call out, "Don't go away!" And I said, "No, no, I'm still here." And the sounds of bathing went on, and sometimes he'd forgotten what he'd wanted to say. After Winston got out of his bath, he walked from the bathroom to his bedroom wearing only a bath towel. However, at Winston's house in Chartwell, if he got out of his bath and wanted to go to another room, he did not wear clothes at all. Winston wore expensive silk underwear because his skin was very soft. Even Hitler and his colleagues had heard stories about Winston, and the Nazi leader, Joseph Goebbels, wrote in his diary, "A book on Churchill reports that he drinks too much and wears silk underwear. He gives his messages to his secretaries in the bath." According to Goebbels, Hitler thought this was very funny. It was true that, for many years, Winston had drunk a lot, and because of this, some of his colleagues did not think he would be able to guide Britain to victory. Not everybody in Parliament had a good opinion of Winston, and he knew this could be dangerous. He needed to find a way of winning those people over to his side. Although he was extremely popular with the British public, he needed his colleagues to support him too. This was why he wrote the letters to Chamberlain and Halifax immediately after he became Prime Minister, to win them to his side. Winston and Clemmy were very kind to Neville Chamberlain and his wife. They decided not to move into the Prime Minister's house at No. 10 Downing Street immediately, but to stay at the Admiralty for another month, so that the Chamberlains did not have to move out of their home quickly. In his first few days as Prime Minister, Winston did all he could to make his relationships with his political colleagues more smooth. At the same time, he wanted to do his best for the ordinary British people. General Ismay remembered how, 2 or 3 days after Winston became Prime Minister, "I walked with him from Downing Street to the Admiralty. A number of people waiting outside the private entrance shouted, 'Good luck, Winnie!' As soon as we were inside the building, he started to cry. 'Poor people,' he said. 'Poor people. They trust me, and I can give them nothing but disaster for quite a long time.'" Winston had formed his new government, and now he started thinking about what he could offer not only to his colleagues in Parliament, but also to his country in its darkest hour. On Monday, 13th of May, 1940, 3 days after Winston had become Prime Minister, he made his first speech to Parliament in his new position. Winston understood that words were powerful, and he was very clever at using them. He knew this had to be a great speech to win his political colleagues to his side, so he prepared it well. Winston always took a long time to write his speeches and thought carefully about what he was going to say. It was said that every minute of a speech took Winston 1 hour's work to prepare. When he was a young army officer in India in 1896, he had taught himself about many different subjects, including the art of making speeches. He studied the speeches of famous Greeks like Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, and different political leaders in history. He believed that, although a good speaker was born with a great skill, they still needed a lot of practice to become better. Winston's first speech to Parliament as Prime Minister was aimed at not only his political colleagues, but also the British public and the world. He needed people to understand that the situation was very dangerous, but he also wanted them to trust him as their leader. Parliament had not met since 9th of May, when they had discussed what to do about the Nazi attack on British troops in Norway. At that time, a large number of Conservative MPs had been very angry with Chamberlain and shouted at him to resign. But now some of these MPs felt that they had acted too quickly, and they were sorry Chamberlain had gone. They were worried about what was going to happen next, and they were not confident about Winston as Prime Minister. So when he entered Parliament, they did not welcome him very warmly. However, when Chamberlain came in, everyone shouted and cheered. During the weekend, reports from the war had said that the situation in Europe was getting worse. That day, German troops had invaded France through the Ardennes Forest, and the Queen of Holland, Queen Wilhelmina, had left her country and come to Britain. Winston knew that, in his speech, he had to make people feel better about the situation. Words were all he had to encourage them and give them hope. At 2:54 p.m, he stood up and began to speak. He started by asking Parliament to welcome the new government, which the King had asked him to form, and which included members of all parties. He had appointed the new war cabinet very quickly, because there was no time to lose. The most important cabinet positions were already filled, and the others would be filled the next day. The next words in Winston's speech have become very famous. "I said to those who have joined this government, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat." Winston said there were very difficult times ahead, which would continue for many months, and of course, people wanted to know what the government was going to do. He said, "You ask, what is our policy? I can say it is to fight by sea, land, and air. What is our aim? I can answer in one word. It is victory." "Without victory," he said, "it would be the end of Britain and the British Empire." However, said Winston, he was sure that it would not be the end of Britain and that Britain would not fail. He finished by asking everyone to join together and help. "I say, come then, let us go forward together." Winston's speech was just 7 minutes long. Today, that speech is thought to be one of the greatest speeches ever made in politics. When Hitler made a speech, he said "I" and "me" a lot, but Winston always said "we" and "us" in his speeches. In this way, he made the British people feel he was with them and on their side. He could not promise victory, but he gave his listeners hope. But on that day, some people in Parliament did not think his speech was strong enough. Winston was disappointed because he had worked very hard to prepare it. However, Winston's old friend and ally, Lloyd George, the Liberal Prime Minister who had guided Britain to victory in the First World War, then made a speech thanking Winston and supporting him strongly. Winston did not have to worry about what the British public thought. The ordinary British people loved his speech and were happy with their new Prime Minister. Many newspapers also supported him. One newspaper showed a picture of a crowd of men following Winston with the words, "All behind you, Winston," under the picture. Meanwhile, Winston and the War Cabinet met again to discuss the latest reports from the war. The War Cabinet met in special war rooms under Whitehall in central London, where they received telephone reports about the war and discussed their plans. Winston informed the meeting that he thought the Germans were going to attack Britain by air. Everything was now happening very quickly in Europe. 3 million German troops were marching across Europe, with another 2 million German soldiers ready and waiting back home. On Tuesday, 14th of May, the War Cabinet received the news that the French had retreated to the city of Antwerp in Belgium, and, together with Belgian troops, were trying to hold the line against the Germans. Further south, the German army had crossed the River Meuse into France. This was a terrible shock for the Allies. For many centuries, the River Meuse had protected France, Belgium and Holland from enemies attacking from the east, but the German army had managed to cross it easily. There was other bad news too. Halifax told the meeting that the French ambassador to London had received a message from Queen Wilhelmina of Holland, now living in Buckingham Palace, saying that Holland was considering peace talks with Hitler. Then Halifax informed the meeting about a telegram he had received from the British ambassador in Rome. It said that the Italian leader, the dictator Benito Mussolini, was making threats to enter the war on Germany's side. Everybody was extremely worried about this, but Winston said they would have to wait and see what happened. Later that day, Winston informed the War Cabinet about a telephone message from the French Prime Minister, Paul Reynaud. The message said that German troops and tanks had crossed the French army lines at Sedan, a town further south on the River Meuse. Reynaud said the French could not stop the German army unless they received help from the British, and asked Winston to send a large number of fighter planes as soon as possible. Winston called Reynaud early the next morning. Reynaud was worried and nervous, and he had terrible news. Although the French army had tried to stop the Germans, they had failed, and the Germans were now marching towards Paris. The road to Paris was open, said Reynaud, and the battle was lost. He asked if Britain could send more troops to help the French, but Winston replied that this was impossible, although he also said that Britain would continue fighting to the end.